quick Scott's bummed about the humidor. And pick your milk for breakfast cereal, Mount Rushmore. They'll be there for you. There's a non-zero chance. They'll be there for you. Help you with lead dominance. They'll be there for you. And read some emails too.
Welcome to the podcast. Time to talk fantasy baseball and time to get you ready for your drafts. When are you guys drafting? I feel like everybody's waiting so long to draft.
I think I was thinking the exact opposite. We've completed almost all of our drafts like a week ago.
Yeah, but that's because you're obligated.
And, like,
you're
people
obligated.
Are still signing.
Yeah, but you're obligated to do drafts. Are the listeners actually drafting right now? I don't think so.
A little inside information. I believe 90% of our drafts on CBSSports.com are still yet to happen.
Right?
So.
Crazy.
There's a lot. I did one last
night.
That's
the better way to do it. It's the way we do it in football, too.
That's
we
good.
Generally draft the 1 or 2 weeks before the season starts.
Yeah, I think my home league is 3 days before the season starts, and that's good because 2 years ago, I lost AJ Pollock during my draft. I had drafted him and then lost him when he broke his elbow in that spring training game.
Oh, no, it is good that people are waiting. It's just I'm a little surprised that it's been such a slow pace, and considering the fact that the season starts a little earlier than usual. But today we are going to kind of give you a little bit of an overview. It's tough to do. I'm trying to find the episode that helps everybody get ready for drafts even more than the position previews did. And like I said at the end of yesterday's show, it's just so much tougher in baseball than football because there are so many different formats. And then even within formats like head-to-head categories leagues, there are so many different types of categories leagues. There are innings minimums and maximums. And it's not one size fits all. It's not even close. But today we will talk a little bit of strategy. I will direct you to an article that Heath wrote yesterday. Was it yesterday that you wrote it?
I did write it yesterday. It was also published yesterday, and I could not be more excited. This is a first on the podcast, and
this really
I'd like to try it out.
It's really not going to help anybody, I don't think.
I think it's going to help a lot
Adam,
of people.
Yeah, Adam, I've written things. Why don't we talk about those?
I'm sure you have. Heath wrote a story about basically how he intends to draft in points leagues, categories leagues, and roto leagues.
I did what you've been asking me to do for like 3 weeks.
Which is what?
I gave a pre-draft strategy.
Yeah, and it was helpful. It's good. And, of course, you're going to have to be flexible, but it's a good baseline to have. And then Scott wrote about pitching strategy, right? Right, Scott White?
Yeah, I've said before on the podcast a few times that I feel like innings has become a market inefficiency because everybody's basically on board with what makes for a skilled pitcher. But the way the pitching landscape is changing, you can't assume innings for the most skilled pitchers like you used to be able to. So I kind of outlined what I mean by that and, you know, showed just how much it's changing and what I'm doing because of it. So that's up on the site, too.
All righty. So before we get into some strategy stuff, let's talk about the big news items. Nelson Cruz items has a grade 1 quad strain. All right, let's go through these. I got 4 big news items here. One of them is Josh Donaldson expects to play tomorrow. We talked about him yesterday. But first, Nelson Cruz, grade 1 quad strain. When are you drafting Nelson Cruz, who is in CBSSports.com leagues only DH eligible? And are you considering downgrading him?
Probably like round 6. And no, not really. This doesn't sound like he doesn't sound concerned. Doesn't sound like a big deal. Maybe he'll have one of those, like, miss the first 5 days of the season situations, but that doesn't sound like something that's going to linger.
And I feel like this has been mostly, Scott and I have been a little different on this spring training. This has been mostly Scott's take on most of the small muscular injuries that have mostly, to his credit, not sounded like big deals. It makes me a little bit more concerned just because Nelson Cruz is, like, old enough to be Chris's dad. And injuries beget injuries.
He had a child when he was 8.
He's old.
He's 37, and Cruz was the number 17 hitter in points leagues, number 13 in roto last year. Still very, very valuable, and he hits 39 home runs or more every single year. And he plays 152 games or more for straight years. I feel like he had some bumps and bruises along the way last year. I don't know if you guys recall. But
I think if you take the approach on an individual level – that this doesn't actually mean anything. It's going to be okay. You may be right slightly more often than you're wrong. But a couple of these are going to, we're going to look back in June and be like, well, he was hurt all spring training. We should have known.
I will just say, with regards to Nelson Cruz, he's probably being undervalued to begin with. So this might bring his price to where it should be.
Okay. Yeah, ADP boy, you want to go? Or
his
ADP
is 51 right now.
Thank you.
We're talking about a guy who's been a top dozen hitter for 5 straight years now. Now, yes, he's 37 years old.
Right.
He could slow down, but we've seen zero sign of it. We're baking in the downside with him already, without really accounting for the upside.
A little bit of it too, though, is, and I know you don't like zero, your team zero positions.
Uh huh.
In a roto league, especially on our site, where you've got all those offensive positions to fill, and he's not going to fill, he can only sit in the utility.
Yes.
And so that should drive it down a little bit too.
Kind of.
I don't worry about it as much in points.
Okay. All right. We're done with Nelson Cruz. Zach Greinke left with groin tightness. How concerning is this? Zach Greinke leaving with groin tightness yesterday's start. He's already dealing with decreased velocity.
Well, okay. The velocity was back.
The velocity good. Was fine good. Yesterday.
And that's why he hurt his groin, because he was trying to.
That's been my position on it, is that I'm just not going to worry about Zach Greinke's velocity in spring training anymore, because it just – we did this last year. We did this the year before.
Mm-hmm. Like, the only reason it's even an issue is because he took the brutally honest stance in typical Zach Greinke fashion that, oh, yeah, every year I worry it's not going to be there when the time comes. It's just like, you know, every year – like, every time I wake up in the middle of the night and my arm is, like, limp and dead, I worry that I'm not going to get the feeling back and we're going to have to amputate. It's not rational, but it's technically true. I do worry about that. So that's all I feel like Greinke is saying.
He looked excellent yesterday before the injury. Doesn't sound like it's a big concern.
Okay.
All right. It was great. I was talking with people on Twitter during that first inning. Well, are you worried about Zach Greinke? No, he looks really good. The velocity's back. And then he doesn't go back out for the second inning.
I might be a slight, like, I don't know that there is a huge difference between pitchers in that tier. He's not in the first tier, but he's right there solidly in the second. And I might be, like, if this lingers for a week, I might be moving him down a little bit.
He's another guy that I think was probably being a little undervalued anyway.
Well, right, I may move him closer to what his ADP is. Maybe.
Yeah, his ADP is 41. I think he's a great value there. I've been willing to take him, you know, in the early 30s. So This could just make him even more of a value. If we're drafting in the next couple of days and people want to let him fall to the fifth round, please do.
Right, and he is currently, Greinke is going after Carrasco, Severino, Verlander, and DeGrom. And, you know, it's possible that with no injury that any of us would take him before those guys. So, 41 overall is pretty solid for Greinke. And Yoenis Cespedes has wrist soreness. X-rays were negative. Look, we know the injuries with this guy. He had too much bulk last year. He came into spring training not overweight, but just without the proper body type, Yoenis Cespedes, and had an injury-plagued season. Not his first. And now wrist soreness, which apparently have been bothering him for like a week. Is this the most concerning of the three between Cruz, Greinke, and Cespedes?
Yes, because it's the Mets. I mean, like, I don't mean to be glib, but this team does not handle injuries well. Like, this is...
They have a whole new medical staff there, right? They've in theory addressed that issue.
Right, but then they kept letting Yoenis Cespedes, who's 31 and has a history of injuries, play through wrist soreness. I think there was a point where he went for x-rays. The manager was talking to the media and he didn't know that Yoenis Cespedes had x-rays, even though Yoenis Cespedes had already said to the media that he had. I believe he had a cortisone shot in the wrist as well. I think you do have to be concerned. Yeah.
Is it team name Thursday? Can we just go with Payne and Yoenis?
Sure.
I think that's pretty good.
Again, his injury risk, we're not projecting him for 160 games.
No.
It's being baked into his ADP.
Right.
And he's another guy that was probably a pretty nice value before this.
Yeah, I think so, but not everybody does. I mean, on a per-game basis, getting him in the 82nd overall with Lorenzo Cain, Domingo Santana, Like, not a lot of outfielders there.
It's kind of a confirmation bias thing. Like, this worries me the most, if for no other reason than because I perceive Cespedes as a perpetual injury risk, and it's like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, but when he plays, he's going to have a 900 OPS. So it's a question of, if he plays 130 games, he's a value at 82nd overall. If he plays 100 games, then he's not.
Let's do some draft tips. Here we go. So Heath had left us abruptly after the podcast had ended in a huff because he wasn't going to be able to eat any pie on Pie Day
yesterday. I was just in a hurry. We finished the podcast. It was almost bedtime.
He was mad.
We did finish a little late. Scott, Chris, and I lingered and discussed doing a strategy episode. And, you know, while discussing, I basically came down to this. Like, your strategy on draft day is more or less dependent on starting pitcher. You know, it's tough to say take this position here, this position there, whatever. But it really, like, your draft is probably going to come down to when you want to take starting pitcher. Agree or disagree on that first point?
It's oversimplification.
It is an oversimplification, but if we're trying to simplify, that seems like a pretty good way of doing it.
I think it comes down to when you're going to take a hitter.
The pitcher's part is, there's three main things I would say. Pitchers, how many relievers, and do you have to get steals?
I think it just...
That's true, yeah.
It really does depend on the league you're in. Like, yes. But that's...
Well,
like,
I mean, yeah.
Last night I did a draft-only league where you don't set a lineup. It's just whatever players you pick, that's who you stick with. And that's the only league where I've taken the elite closers. I took Kenley Jansen and Craig Kimbrell, both because they fell a little bit, and it seems like the right format where their value gets maximized.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not my thought most of the time. Most of the time I think they're being overdrafted. So it's just...
And obviously, if you're playing in like a points league, then it doesn't really matter your opinion on steals. It's just another drop in the bucket for these players. I think if we're looking for a widespread, overarching takeaway for draft prep season, it's what you said it is. It's like, how early am I going to go after starting pitching? How hard am I going to go after starting pitching?
Yeah, and then how about this? Hitting is deeper than pitching. And you guys tell me if you disagree or agree. Hitting is deeper than pitching. So if you're going to stress over anything on draft day, it should probably be pitching. And you should take advantage of the depth that's available at certain positions, certain hitting positions.
I think you can look at it either way. You can either look at it and say, the lack of depth at starting pitcher makes me want to invest in starting pitcher. Or you could say that the fact that there's 12 good pitchers and then everyone else is kind of the same guy could make you say that it's worth investing in those top guys.
Well,
skipping out on the middle class and just going with the dart.
That's the way I feel about hitting, though. I feel like there are about 25 hitters who stand out, and then the rest are basically all the same. Now, some you get into categories leagues, some contribute differently in different categories, and so you have to give some mind to that. But like, I like Scooter Gennett basically as much as I like Jonathan Scope, you know, and they're getting drafted 15 rounds apart. So, and that's just one example. There are plenty of examples in the current offensive environment where, you know, record number of players are hitting 20 home runs every year. There's just so much interchangeability beyond those, you know, couple dozen elite, truly elite hitters.
As I talked about in my article that you were wanting to talk about in this segment, I don't know how much deeper hitter is than pitcher if you are taking a strategy in a certain format where you don't need 5 or 6 or 7 starting pitchers.
Very true. Right. So that's like be a head-to-head categories or maybe even a roto league where you're going to have more relievers than what we used to do like even 3-4 years ago.
Just beat everybody at offense and then try to win 3 of the pitching categories.
Okay. But so I guess I want to be a little bit more general, but it's good to also cater this to certain formats as well. I look at ADP, and Brian Dozier is, like, the most important player because I have, like, the Dozier line. And that is where I think the hitters become less inspiring. Not to say that there aren't really good hitters after that. They're going to be great hitters after that. You're going to get Bregman and Benintendi and Hoskins and stuff like that. But it seems like the round one, round two, and then, like, up to Brian Dozier, for me anyway, hitters in round 3, which would include Cody Bellinger, Josh Donaldson, George Springer, Corey Seager, and D. Gordon, Like, those are the guys I feel like I really need to, like, I really want.
That sounds like a pretty good cutoff. I wouldn't include Justin Upton on the good side of that cutoff, and Gordon's only on the good side in categories.
Did I say Justin Upton?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely not him. Yeah. The hitters I meant to say were...
He's going ahead of Dozier?
No. The hitters I meant to say were Bellinger, Springer, Donaldson,
Seager,
and Gordon. Definitely not Upton.
Yep, that sounds like almost exactly where I'd draw the line.
And basically, I've been at the, like, I want two hitters and one pitcher in the first three rounds, because that's where I see the big drop-off in hitter. And pitchers, like, pitchers, actually, that's a good point in the draft for pitchers, round three. That's where Carrasco, Severino, Verlander, DeGrom. Like, if you're getting your number two pitcher in round four, and it's one of those guys, or Greinke, or Robbie Ray, or Darvish, or whatever, like, that seems like a really good start to me. And I don't even know if categories or points or roto matters. I'm trying to give a maybe oversimplification. I understand that. Maybe this isn't helpful. But that's what, if somebody came out to me on the street and say, hey, what would you do in fantasy baseball? I'd say two hitters, two pitchers with my first four picks is not a bad way to start.
Yeah.
And then, I'd ask them what kind of league they were playing in.
Yeah, but even like no, shouldn't you start would, like
I
that
think
anyway?
What you're saying, I would not respond to a
I think what you're saying, Adam, is pretty much true across all formats this year. That one particular point where, like, I want one or two of the top 16. Sorry, I want two, basically, of the top 16 starting pitchers, regardless of what format I'm playing in, just because that drop-off is going to be as extreme in all of them.
And hang on, Scott, I'll come right back to you. I want to, further that point. Top 16, I think we maybe said top 17 starting pitchers, you want two of them. I said two hitters, two pitchers in the first four rounds, but if you think you can get one of those top 16 pitchers after round four, change your strategy. Take Kenley Jansen, take another pitch, take another hitter, whatever. Get that guy in round five. It's about where you think you can get that second potential ace.
Yeah, and often in leagues of 10, 12 teams or fewer, the Robbie Rays and Chris Archers will fall to round five.
Sure.
So, I mean, if you're I include them in that group. I understand not everybody would, but they are in the top 16 for me, that group that I'm considering genuinely high-end pitchers.
Now, Heath, what do you want to amend here?
I think that this has mostly been a points league discussion.
I approach all formats that way, because then, like, I know that you might go RP heavy or whatever, but all right, put it this way. I definitely approach points and roto that way, where I want two out of the top 16 pitchers probably in the first five rounds. Head-to-head categories league, it would depend on the innings minimum.
Right. In a roto league, I'm pretty happy if I take one pitcher in the first five rounds, and I may not take another one for another five rounds.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten to that point, but that's interesting. Chris, you agree with
because
that?
Because in a rotisserie league, I can take, and I mentioned it specifically in the article, guys like Lance McCullers, Blake Snell, those high upside guys that I have questions about their innings, I'm that's the format I want them in. And I want to build an offense that has as many stolen bases with the best average early I can get, and then I'll chase dongs later.
Well, it's not like innings are the only concern for those two in particular.
Sure, but it's not like the top 18 don't have concerns either.
Well, but at least they're proven.
Some of them are.
McCullers and
like I don't think
Snell.
Robbie Ray is more proven than Lance McCullers.
Robbie Ray's best season featured him Robbie Ray's best season featured him throwing about 35 more innings than Lance McCullers' best season. If we're going to say
right, but I'm saying Lance McCullers hasn't been good in the other ways that Robbie Ray's been good.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah, back-to-back years with a 3-2
look at the numbers.
Yeah, Robbie Ray outperformed his ERA last
year.
Robbie Ray outperformed his peripherals.
I don't want to. So Robbie Ray is kind of where we get hung up, and I think it's just because Scott is higher on Robbie Ray.
But it's not just Robbie Ray.
No, they all have
risks. Look at Lance McCullers' ERA and WHIP last year. They were not very good. They were okay, but they weren't very good.
That is true. Last year, yes.
Yeah, he's had...
Robbie Ray had an awful season 2 years ago. 2017 is not the only year that happened.
It's true.
Okay, but it... But, I just don't know how you can say there's not a higher level of provenness there because it's actually happened.
Right, but it's like 35 innings.
And I think it depends on how much you ascribe of Robbie Ray's success last year to luck. We all expect Ray to be a mid-3 ERA guy this year.
But Adam's right. It's not about the specific players. But when you look at, especially once you get outside of that top four at starting pitcher, and even the top four, two of them are over 30, Clayton Kershaw might have a serious back issue. Madison Bumgarner is coming off shoulder surgery. Steven Strasburg's never healthy. Noah Syndergaard missed the entire season. Carlos Carrasco has one season at this level. Luis Severino has one. Like, you can go down the entire list. And so this is why, yes, you want two aces. You want two top 15 pitchers. But you want two guys who are going to be top 15 pitchers at the end of the season. And it's really hard to say.
I think the innings are the biggest determinant for that.
In points leagues, for sure.
All right, in every league.
So I know what Chris is saying, and you make a good point, that pitching is unpredictable. I would say that, like, you say Lance McCullers. Who was the other guy you said? Heath? Lance
Blake Snell?
Like, these are actually two of our favorites. Right?
I like them. I like them as like my fifth and sixth starters to break out. I don't want to have to rely on them.
I'd throw Rich Hill and Alex Wood in the same.
All right, you got to identify, but there aren't that many guys that you're taking late that really have the potential to join the elite pitchers.
Strongly disagree.
Really?
There are a lot.
Like, I mean, this is definitely a team Kreeth, team Scam thing going on
here.
Because I think
good.
You guys are in the minority in terms of I only want one starting pitcher in the first five rounds. ADP shows most people are drafting more than one.
That
right?
is also true. But I do like that we are giving different takes here. And I think, you know, that this kind of we have probably this is where Team Scam and Team Kreeth have become different is with starting pitcher approach. And Scott and I are definitely going to invest more in starting pitchers in any format.
Even head-to-head categories.
Well, head-to-head categories, I don't really like the whole RP thing. I think it's kind of cheap, but it's not. I don't have any problem with people who do it. I just don't want to. I like having a regular. To answer your question, I should probably be a little bit more RP heavy than I was last year in my head-to-head categories league, which I did well in. Didn't win, but I think I came in third. I don't know, Heath. I'll still be more starting pitcher heavy than Team Kreeth would be, but that is the format that, sure, you can get away with not investing in.
I will also
pitcher.
Say, even if you don't want to go RP heavy, or if your league has an innings requirement that means you shouldn't go RP heavy, I still think in head-to-head categories, you should not invest as much in starting pitching early.
Well, maybe I don't understand your strategy very well. But I was under the impression...
There's a link.
No.
I was under the impression that the strategy was more about having mostly relievers who you don't have to pay a lot for, but still having a couple starters who you can rely on for good percentages, but just having them in there so that you can occasionally win strikeouts and wins. In which case, obviously, I was assuming those starting pitchers you'd want them to be high-end starters so that they wouldn't ruin the ERA and whip help that your relievers are providing.
I do want them to be high-end starters, but I'd rather take four or five shots later in the draft than spend two of my first five picks, because one of the most important parts of that strategy is being better than other teams in hitting categories, and that is why I want to take more hitters early on. If I take two starting pitchers early on, then I'm not getting an advantage really anywhere.
All right, so I think this really gets to the divergence we're having here is I don't believe in today's MLB. I don't believe there are mid to late round pitchers who can become high end pitchers, because I don't think any
it
of those guys are
year,
going
Scott.
To be allowed to throw
Hold
200.
On.
It
Relax.
Happens every year, though.
It happened for Luis Severino last year.
It happened with Robbie Ray. Like, if we're convinced that Robbie Ray
you just keep saying
you have him as a top 15 pitcher. He was terrible in 2016.
It doesn't happen nearly as often as it used to, and good luck picking the right guy.
I mean, yeah, okay, so that's been Scott's
pitcher who won't get hurt.
That's been Scott's point, that it's harder find those guys these days because of the innings restrictions. And last year it was Severino and Ray, and, you know, there were hitters that last year was Bellinger and Judge, too. And that's a funny thing. Like, we can sit here and talk strategy. We could both be right. We could all be right. We could all be wrong. There are different ways to skin a cat. You could win categories leagues one way and win the other way. You know what I mean? It's a personal preference thing. I think I kind of look at it.
I don't. Go ahead. I don't. I really think, like, I'm really convicted about this. Like, I really believe it's true. I really believe, like, Luis Severino was the one who came close to throwing 200 innings last year, who had never done it before. But
if less pitchers are doing that, then you don't have to do that to get into the top 20.
And the other thing, Scott,
but
is
the gap between number 15 and number 20 is so much bigger than it ever used to be.
Like, the other thing, though,
because he's like, top 20,
last year it was like
enough.
30 or 40 points.
Sorry, let me just make this point. Like, you might be right about that, Scott, but in a head-to-head categories league, it might not matter because the strategy is let's win ERA, WHIP, and saves, lose the other two pitching categories, but go 3-2 every week in pitching and have better hitting, and it just doesn't really matter. Which is why it's not my favorite strategy.
Yeah, that's fine if you want to do that strategy. I'm just talking about pitching in general, like how we assess the position. And I just the 200 inning guy, the 180 inning guy even is dying. They're going away. They're not happening anymore. And I feel like the only ones you can rely to do that are grandfathered in. Maybe one or two guys will emerge every year, maybe, but it's not going to be like half a dozen guys, you know, 6 to 10 guys like we used to be able to count on.
Sure. And okay, so obviously we see where everybody differs here, and that's fine. I think that one of the reasons why I consider hitting or pitching sort of shallower is that hitting is deeper. You know, that's the other part of this equation. Is that it's just easier to find hitting off the waiver wire. When I started doing fantasy baseball like 8 years ago, it was easier to find pitching. And up until, I don't know, 3 years ago, it was just you find pitching on the waiver wire. Now I find hitting on the waiver wire all the time. And that shapes my strategy as well. Big
you
time.
Can find home runs and RBI on the waiver wire.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to find batting average, runs, and stolen bases on the waiver wire.
Also a good point.
And I think, like, and maybe this is wrong, but I think probably in a points league last year, 3 or 4, maybe 5 of the top 20 starting pitchers you could have found on the waiver wire at some point last year.
Okay, I could take a look at that. 3 or 4 of the top 25.
I mean, Irvin Santana,
yeah.
Gio Gonzalez, Alex Wood, Robbie Ray,
Drew
Luis
Pomerantz,
Severino,
Jimmy Nelson,
Rich Hill.
And
Brad
we could do that exercise with hitters, I'm sure, and find plenty.
Rich Hill was a waiver wire pickup last year.
Yes. What? He was awful the first month of the season. People were dropping him, yes.
Okay, but he was drafted.
I have no comment on that particular.
Jimmy Nelson, Charlie
Rich
Morton.
Rich Hill was also not a top 25 starting pitcher last year.
Do we think of Gio Gonzalez and Irvin Santana as aces, though? I mean, they may have technically finished in the top 25, but they're not that good. And they weren't that good last year. On the same level as like a Justin Verlander.
Both of them were really, really good last year.
All right, let me ask you some questions. Let's do this a little quicker here. What's the best position to wait on? I think it's outfield.
Not in a five outfielder league. That scares me to death.
I don't mind filling my last three outfield spots kind of late, but I agree. Like, you don't want your first outfielder to be late or even second. But
I'm
going to
say second base.
Take advantage of the depth because late in the draft there are a lot of good outfielders you'd like, right? No.
Yeah,
there's a lot of good outfielders that could turn into good hitters and could be cut in April.
All right, second base for Scott. Anyone else?
Yeah,
I think it depends on what we mean by the term wait. Like I like getting my shortstop in like the 80 range. So if that's waiting, then yeah, I'll wait on shortstop.
I don't know if that's waiting. I think double-digit rounds is waiting, like 120 or later in drafts.
And you're not going to like this, but I'm going to say that I think it depends on the format.
I'll say third base.
Because I think in a head-to-head points league, waiting on closer a lot of times makes a lot of sense. Only 24 of them are going to get drafted.
Sure.
But I don't have any interest in a categories or in a roto league to wait on closer. I'm probably more likely to wait on a starting pitcher in that format.
What's the best position to reach for?
Catcher. If you can get one of the first three. Otherwise, catcher is the best position to wait on.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to reach for Posey or Contreras personally. It would basically be Sanchez. And I haven't actually done it before. So, I would still say shortstop. Like, okay. They're in a 12-team league. There are not 12... more or less equivalent shortstops, and that it's rare that you don't see that in most positions these days.
I only like to draft players at good value, so I don't want to reach on anyone.
Okay, great.
I mean, that's kind of the right answer. I'm sorry we're being so difficult here, but like, you should not reach.
Well, I don't agree.
If you want to reach on upside.
See, like I look at like the Masahiro Tanaka, Garrett Cole. Aaron Nola starting pitcher range. And if I have two pitchers at that point and those starting pitchers are on the board and I don't take one of them as my third, I'm probably not going to like my pitching staff very much. So that's just one example of when I would maybe reach to get that tier of starting pitcher so I could feel better about my first three starters. I think I'd like to have three starters I feel comfortable with.
Like those guys are available in the fifth or sixth round, and I feel like maybe all three of the guys you just said could be aces this year.
Right.
Tanaka's available in the eighth round.
Right. We're talking, yeah, sixth to eighth round maybe, and guys with legit, you know, ace potential. And then after that, there are some, but there aren't many that I like that much. So that's a case where I might reach because I feel like there's a big teardrop at that point. Teardrop.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends what you mean by reach. Is Corey Seager in round three a reach? Is Elvis Andrews in round six a reach?
No.
I don't think so. Well, then I guess you shouldn't reach. But that's like, I feel like I make those guys in those rounds a higher priority than maybe some people would.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Just because I feel like the teardrop's coming in both cases.
Player you have the most shares of?
Man, if Adrian Beltre is actually as old as everyone thinks he is, all of my teams are going to suck.
They're not going to suck because you took him in the 12th round.
That's right. Yeah, Adrian Beltre is 100% the answer for me. I might have like 80% exposure to him at this point. I'm just drafting him everywhere I can.
Heath, Scott, most exposure?
Probably Whit Merrifield.
Ooh.
Because he's always like, I don't invest in, you know, obviously you have to have third pick to invest in Trey Turner. And I'm not one to invest in D. Gordon or Billy Hamilton because I don't think they help in enough areas. So Whit Merrifield is like my go-to steals guy. And I can usually get him in like round seven, maybe round six if it's a 15 team league. But even in points leagues, I mean, it's not like it's just steals for this guy. Showed power last year. He doesn't strike out very much. Like, he was the fifth best second baseman on a per game basis in points leagues also. So, I mean, I'm pretty much buying what I do, and it's not like you have to pay for what he did last year because everyone's kind of discounting that. So I draft him pretty much everywhere.
I haven't actually put together my list yet, but I will have it by next week because I actually keep track of this usually. But for sure, I have a lot of Buster Posey. I've got him in the fifth and sixth round sometimes. I have quite a bit of Paul DeJong. I have a lot of Odubel, Cody Allen.
Okay.
And Blake Snell.
I think the guy that I've ended up with the most, it's been mostly mock drafts. I've only done one real draft so far, I think, is Miguel Cabrera. And I feel the same way about Miguel Cabrera as Chris feels about Adrian Beltre. First of all, I think if you can get him 91st overall now, I don't even think that's – I think if he's a total bust, that's not even sinking your team. He's going after Cespedes. He's going after Domingo Santana. I got him for $13, Miguel Cabrera,
right,
in an auction.
There are a lot of players where you have to pay for the upside without paying for the downside, and I think we're about to talk about them based on the rundown. Miguel Cabrera, you're not paying for the downside
right?
there.
I
like
love
unless
it.
He could be just as bad as he was last year.
In which case, you're paying too much for the downside. But
yeah, but you can get away with having your eighth or ninth round pick being a bust.
Right,
it's
like
not
at,
a huge
at that
deal.
Point, you're not paying that much for the downside. Like the downside is considerably priced in.
I love it.
I think he's a good value there, and I think that kind of brings up a point. Maybe the position I said I thought you could wait on should have been first base.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to ask you the player you don't want under any circumstances. First, though, I have to read an email. It's about SeatGeek. Okay, this is from Brett. This is an actual email from a few days ago. I started looking at the MLB site for tickets when I remembered your ad for SeatGeek. What a great app. I downloaded the app, and within minutes, I had two great seats to a game at Petco. My deal was rated an 8.6, but with the promo code, I saved the extra $20, so I felt it was more like an 8.7832901. I got tickets for the Angels game while I was on the phone with my friend who lives out there. It was that easy. As we chatted, I bought the tickets. Three tickets in the third row of center field for $45. Remember, he used the promo code FANTASY. I didn't even need the promo code there because it was so cheap on SeatGeek. I'll definitely be using this app in the future. I mean, there's like a non-zero chance. Great email, Brett. Thank you very much. All of you, download the SeatGeek app and use the promo code FANTASY. $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. It's going to search multiple sites. It's going to find the best deals and help you make smart decisions. I use SeatGeek. Brett used SeatGeek. We all use and love SeatGeek. Join us and use the promo code FANTASY on SeatGeek. All right, who are the players you don't want under any circumstance?
I reject the question on the premise.
Can we not be pedantic on one of these questions and just answer what he means?
Thank you.
Which is, which player do you not want at the price you have to pay to draft them in the majority
of the price you have to pay to draft them? Okay.
The Jose Berríos and Domingo Santana for me. They're both going in the eighth round. It just, I think you're paying for close to 100% of the upside without considering any of the downside at that price.
Thank you, Chris. Scott, Heath, players you don't want under any circumstances?
I'm looking at ADP now. I'm not ADP boy. So I will say that I do not under any circumstance want to draft
Marcus Stroman at 130th is Heath's answer. We'll move on to Scott.
In points, I would draft Marcus Stroman at 130th. So I disagree with that. AJ Pollock.
Okay. That's I like that. Scott?
So there are obviously a lot of players I wouldn't want to draft at the price they're going at. To a guy who I would have a very hard time seeing myself draft under any reasonable circumstance, I think it would be Steven Souza.
Yeah.
Because he's already kind of a bad hitter who just does one thing really well and one, I guess, another thing kind of well. But I'm worried he's going to do nothing well. And I know, I guess the argument against that was, well, he was already playing in a bad park. I just have this fear that Chase Field with the humidor is going to be worse than anything we've ever seen.
That is within the range of possibilities. That the math says it could be the worst baseball park that we have seen. I would like to amend my answer and add Eric Hosmer. He is going 70 picks ahead of Matt Carpenter, 70 picks ahead of Carlos Santana, a full round ahead of Miguel Cabrera. No way, no hell.
Gotcha. All right, I think that's pretty good strategy talk. Is there any closer news that you guys have for me?
The most recent potential shakeups there, I think, are the Cardinals and the Angels. And there's not anything super concrete in either scenario. John, is it Mozeliak? Is that how you say it? The Cardinals president of baseball operations?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. It looks like Mozeliak, but I don't think that's how you say it. Anyway, he did a radio interview recently where he was asked who would be the Cardinals closer if the season started today. And he said something to the effect of, because Gregerson's injured, right? Probably Dominic Leone. So, you know, a lot of news aggregation sites out there just kind of took the second half of that statement without considering the first. I mean, there's a real chance Gregerson will be healthy by opening day, but at the very least, that tells us who the fallback option is if he isn't. And then the other one is Cam Bedrosian, according to John Heyman, is thought to be the front runner for the Angels and not Blake Parker like we were all suspecting. So, again, that's still thought to be the front runner isn't carving it in stone by any means, but I've moved him ahead of Blake Parker in my rankings.
And as I brought up yesterday in my risers, there are some people that think Nate Jones is ahead of Soria.
Oh, yeah.
The White Sox closer job.
It's a good one.
How important is closer to you guys?
It's something you need. It's not something I invest a lot in because there's so much turnover there. And on the one hand, you can say, well, that's all the more reason to invest in Craig Kimbrell and Kenley Jansen because those guys are ones who have shown they're not going to lose the job and are so much better than anything else their teams could go with. But on the other hand, you can use the turnover to your advantage by just not investing a lot and counting on new options to emerge, even if the ones you draft don't pan out.
Yeah, I've been planning, and I might try to do something where I look at the average draft position of closers over the last 5 years, let's say, and see how many of them actually keep their job. Because I would guess the number's probably as high as half, maybe even higher, of guys that we think will be closers on opening day or guys that we're drafting to be closers lose the job at some point.
But that
season
number is probably it's not in perfect alignment with ADP, but if you look at closers that people quote unquote wait on after the 12th round, it's probably closer to 75%.
Sure.
And if you look at guys going before the 12th round, it's probably closer to 25%.
Who are we really confident won't lose their jobs this year? Like, obviously, it's varying degrees all the way down, but Jansen and Kimbrough are the only ones I can say I'm really confident.
Rysel Iglesias.
He could get traded and lose his job.
Like, Corey Knebel is the number four closer being drafted right now. We think he's an elite closer. He was last season. But his career didn't start last season. Mm-hmm. You know, he was pretty good in the minors, but his strikeout rate was never what it was last season. He had three partial seasons before last season where he was pretty mediocre. He had a 4 ERA and 10 strikeouts per nine. If he just returns to being a very good strikeout pitcher rather than one of the two best in the entire league,
mm-hmm.
he walks a lot of guys and gives up a lot of fly balls in a really bad park. He could lose his job by the end of April, and I would not be surprised.
There was a time John Axford was Corey Knebel. Oh, look at this guy, these brilliant ratios. He's becoming a stud closer, and then he serves up a grand slam to Ramon Hernandez, whoever it was, on opening day, and nobody ever thinks of him that way
and,
again.
And lots of relief pitchers put up one good year and fall off the map, which is Corey Knebel, Felipe Rivero, guys that very well could not be good.
I also feel confident Cody Allen's not going to lose his job, and Wade Davis is not going to lose his job.
I'm just going to make a bold prediction. Cody Allen finally gets like 38 or more saves.
Yeah.
There's no reason why it hasn't happened. It's just the weirdest, flukiest thing. He gets 31 saves or so every year, and there's no rhyme or reason for it.
And they just gave Wade Davis like $30 million. He's not going to lose his job, and he's not bad. He's good. So.
And I understand I may be being overly pedantic by saying this, but I could certainly envision a scenario where Cody Allen loses his job. I was halfway predicting it going into last year. I mean, he's one of the few closers who we can say for sure isn't the best reliever in his pen. Now, I'm not predicting he'll lose his job, but like, I don't know that there's more than 80% confidence on any of those guys other than the top two.
And the other thing to keep in mind is that closers aren't that much less susceptible to injury than starters.
Okay, then. Let's talk about some injuries and some spring training storylines, and I do want to read some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We have good ones today. So I'll just try to go through these quickly. Jacob DeGrom will start the second game of the season for the Mets. He's fine. Scott Servais, the Mariners manager, said he might limit Robinson Cano to the 140 to 145 game range. And Cano is currently out 5 to 7 days with a hamstring strain. So I saw that in the New York Post. Kind of interesting. They're thinking less is more for Cano. Fewer games, maybe better production. But this is a guy who plays like 155 games basically every year. If he's at 140 to 145, I was almost going to say Cano in the who's the player you just don't draft under any circumstance discussion. He would have to be like a 10th round
pick. But I drafted him once this year, so I can't say.
We see him fall, but if that's actually the truth and he's going to play 140 to 145 games, I'm not sure he should be ranked ahead of Ian Happ.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's true, though. You're right. Like, the managers say these things all the time, but I thought I'd bring it up that he did say that about Cano. Catcher Steven Vogt for the Brewers would not be ready for opening day. We had an email about Manny Pena. Do you guys like Manny Pena?
I mean, as a second catcher, I think he's being undervalued. There is some, you know, in a catcher context, there's some offensive potential there. And it looked like he was the favorite to start even when it wasn't clear whether Vogt would be ready or not. So, yeah, he's in my top 24. And, you know, I'd rather have him than somebody like Jan Gomes or Jason Castro or Francisco Cervelli. Sure.
Ivan Nova is going to start opening day for Pittsburgh. Brandon Finnegan has left biceps tightness. It's not believed to be serious. Troy Tulowitzki will begin the season on the DL due to a bone spur in his heel. John Gibbons said that Tulowitzki is the shortstop when he's healthy. Javier Baez is nearing a return from a hamstring injury. A couple days ago, we were asked about players we would draft and put on our DL. I don't know if we said Michael Brantley, but I imagine he's one of them.
Yeah, sure, if he's not ready, yeah.
Yeah, if he's not ready, it sounds like a question still.
And same with Mitch Haniger. He's dealing with a sore hand, might not be ready for opening day.
I think he hit his first home run yesterday of spring.
Oh, did he? Okay, my apologies.
So. I think I remember seeing that too, yeah.
Ryan Braun, hopefully he's okay. Ryan Braun hit two run home runs yesterday. Let's talk about some
Matt Carpenter hit a home run his first yesterday.
Off Verlander, yeah. All right, let's talk about some storylines, spring training storylines here. Pitcher notes first. Justin Verlander has one walk and 21 strikeouts. Madison Bumgarner has one walk and 22 strikeouts. Verlander had a 1.96 ERA after the All-Star break, and he's a guy who has had kind of higher ERAs than you might think, because he often struggles for half a season and then he's absolutely unbelievable.
He also has had higher FIPs than you would think. I think last year it was like 3.738. Not necessarily. He gives up a lot of fly balls.
I've heard some speculate, and it may not be totally off base, that's kind of by design, that he takes it easy early on because he wants to be at his best for the playoffs. Because fortunately, he's been in a position where almost every year of his career, he could feel pretty good about going to the playoffs, and certainly now with the Astros. That's a little seed of doubt for Verlander. Like Chris was saying earlier, there's a seed of doubt for every pitcher beyond the top four, and that's what it is for Verlander. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Gerrit Cole had a great start the other day. He has 15 strikeouts and 12 and two-thirds, and this is a guy that we're hoping the Astros sort of help him reinvent himself, and we see the strikeout potential from Gerrit Cole. So good start the other day. And I think AJ Hinch said, he likes that Gerrit Cole kind of thinks out there, uses his brain on the mound, doesn't just throw. It was nice to see James Paxton bounce back. He still has a 10.32 ERA this spring, but 4 2/3, 2 runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts against the Giants a couple days ago, or yesterday, actually.
Yeah, his velocity concerns were more concerning to me than Greinke's. He just had the good sense not to voice the most fundamental level of concern to the media. But hey, the velocity's back for him too, so that's good.
Julio Teheran, Adam Wainwright, and Matt Shoemaker have done some good things this spring. Julio Teheran, Adam Wainwright, Matt Shoemaker, do you have interest in any of them?
I think Julio Teheran is probably being overlooked in the later rounds. He obviously doesn't have the upside that we once thought he did, but there's a little bit of Jeff Samardzija in him.
I was going to say he could be a poor man Marcus Stroman.
Sure, yeah. Like, a lot of innings, decent, like, seventh pitcher on your staff. There's nothing wrong with that.
If I remember correctly, he was terrible at home. So hopefully that first year in SunTrust, look at the splits right now. Julio Teheran had a 5.86 ERA at home and a 3.14 on the road. So hopefully he can get that fixed.
Getting rid of Matt Kemp should help.
Matt Kemp can't field the ball when it's in the stands, right? But any other pitcher notes you want to talk about, or shall we move on to hitters?
Let's move on to hitters.
Well, he was my player I loved on Valentine's Day. He was the darling of spring training last year. He is a dud right now, Greg Bird. I can't say I'm not a little concerned. The Yankees don't seem concerned, but he does not have an extra base hit. He's batting 161. 297 on base, which is good for a 161 average, but no extra base hits in 31 at-bats. Yikes. Anybody worried about Greg Bird or just a spring training slump?
I don't know that I'd go as far as to say I'm worried. I'm obviously not getting excited about him like I was last spring.
Well, we all remember how last spring's performance was predictive of what happened.
You cannot use that on Greg Bird. He got hurt. He got hurt like the second to last day of spring training and was not healthy all year, and actually had much further damage in his ankle than we realized, as he had to get surgery. So I reject that Greg Bird claim.
I'm not worried about Greg Bird because I haven't drafted him. So
no,
it's
I have.
It's 31 at bats, and it's cool that he has 12 walks. So I would not say stock
six,
down for him.
Walks. No, he has
not
six,
up either.
Scott. He has six walks.
Oh, okay.
Walks.
Sorry. I was looking
last year.
Last spring, sorry.
Yeah, 6 walks, 11 strikeouts, which is good. But last year it was 12 walks, 10 strikeouts.
He does strike out a lot, and he didn't do that in the minors. He has so far in the majors. That's the concern, I think. He might not make enough contact.
But it is worth noting that after he got back from surgery last year, he struck out only like 20% of the time. So, The season, the part of the year where we weren't saying the injury ruined him, he was not a high strikeout guy.
Ryan Braun hit his first 2 home runs of spring training yesterday. He's having a really nice spring. I mean, those were his first 2 home runs, but batting average is great. Just a matter of playing time with him and Santana. Delino DeShields, we talked about him, but looks like he's going to be the center fielder and leadoff hitter for the Rangers, and he is batting .353. And he walks a decent amount, right? He's good on base guy.
He's a good on base guy.
Yeah. Three steals so far for DeShields. Wilson Ramos off to a terrible start. But two walks, three strikeouts, that's a good sign. But any concerns about Ramos? He's a guy that we like at his value at catcher.
None
at all.
And then, yeah, I mean, just to give you a perspective, Mookie Betts has a .594 OPS right now. So I know we're not worried about him. Jesse Winker has a .1031 OPS. Scott, you mentioned Winker yesterday or 2 days ago as a late round. The prospects we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, just yesterday. And this should help him be a big part of that outfield rotation they're planning in Cincinnati. I feel like he has the upside, particularly with the way his power kind of returned to him once he reached the majors and obviously hit a friendly environment, small park. If you can count on him to be like a 20-homer guy, I have a hard time believing he's not the Reds' second-best hitter already.
Okay. So that's Jesse Winker. And the last hitter that I thought was interesting, I've mentioned him several times, but I guess I'm starting to lose a little faith in Yoan Moncada. He's just not doing anything. But 7 walks, 12 strikeouts, that's encouraging. But batting .222 with a .333 slugging, that's not encouraging. And we haven't seen much from Moncada, guys. What's your take on him right now?
Like, it's probably meaningless, but there gets to a point where for a player who has done precious little at the major league level, like, you want to see something at some point, right? I actually have moved him down a little at second base, in part because I've come to grips with how much I like other second basemen like Ian Happ and have moved them ahead of Moncada. But I mean, there's still obvious breakout potential. I wouldn't say Moncada is a guy I'm not drafting under any circumstances.
Okay. So some emails we'll finish the show with the listeners here. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. This is Nick from Cornwall, New York. Dear Non-Zero Chance, in a league other than CBS, Chris Taylor has shortstop eligibility. How might this change Scott and Heath's rankings? Would it be crazy to draft Chris Taylor in the 9th round, pick 100 or so, of a 12-team categories redraft league?
I don't know that it's crazy to draft him there anyway. It sounds a couple rounds too early. But Chris Taylor is a player who, like, you can count on him stealing between 15 and 20 bases. You know, provided he's good enough that he keeps his job and plays every day and all that. He bats at the top of the Dodgers lineup. He's so versatile. Even before you factor in the possibility of shortstop eligibility, he's a player I find myself targeting a lot in the middle rounds, especially in roto leagues.
Yeah, I don't know that there is a big enough difference for me between second base and shortstop that I would move him up quite that far. I've got him at 138 right now, but it's not. If you like him, go take him there.
Would you guys, if Chris Taylor were shortstop eligible, would you take him over Didi Gregorius?
I think I would. Yeah, I think so. But I'm not super high on Didi. So
I'm taking him over Didi Gregorius now.
Okay.
All right. This is Paul. Paul has a different take on our roto strategies. Love the podcast, but as a 28-year veteran of rotisserie baseball, I have to take issue with your stand in the March 7th podcast that hitters are more valuable than pitchers in traditional roto because there are 14 hitters and 9 pitchers starting spots. The sheer number of players on both sides makes sense when you are talking about head-to-head points leagues, but not roto. Both pitching and hitting have 5 categories in roto and are in the final tally at the end of the year, all categories are equal. So in a 10-team league, pitching is worth a potential 50 points, hitting is worth the same potential 50 points. And in reality, since you get the possible 50 hitting points from 14 hitters and the possible 50 pitching points from only 9 pitchers, each individual pitcher is actually more valuable than the individual hitters. You have much less room for error with pitchers. And if you factor in that only a fraction of your pitchers will contribute to one whole category, whereas every batter can contribute to every category, then those pitchers are even more valuable in roto.
That kind of contradicts itself because you're like those pitchers who can only contribute in 4 categories can only contribute in 4 categories.
I liked his first point though, that because you're starting fewer pitchers, those pitchers need to be more impactful. And it's a reason why I ranked Clayton Kershaw higher in roto than points because of that reason. But you know, if we were like, I think part of what he's missing in the hitters are more valuable than pitchers in this format because there are more lineup spots to fill. And maybe we didn't phrase it very well
maybe
on that particular podcast, but there's going to be a clearer scarcity
right
among the hitters than there is the pitchers because they're spread thinner.
Yeah.
And it's also that fungibility and that volatility at starting pitcher. Like, looking back at the end of the season, yes, each individual starting pitcher may be more valuable or to the team that wins. But based on draft capital that you have to spend, you're still investing in risky assets. And so that's where it comes in. It's easier to get away with not drafting a lot of pitching early than it is to do it with hitting.
You know what's funny is, like, I feel like maybe that whole strategy discussion we had, maybe the most important thing for me when I'm drafting is the waiver wire, what I anticipate I'll be able to get on the waiver wire. And I guess that's the difference between the roto leagues and then the shallower leagues is, like, I just don't think I can get the same type of hitting. I know I can't get the same type of hitting
that's
on the waiver wire.
That's a very good point.
Right?
Very. Yeah, and I don't think we've... like, in how many years have we done this podcast? I don't think we've dived into it that much. But, yeah, like, I mean, another example of that, and it's the most extreme example, is, like, in NLAL-only leagues, like, really, really deep leagues, I love the boring players in those leagues, and I wouldn't go anywhere near them in a mixed league because you can count on big finds off the waiver wire in mixed leagues, and you can't, like, you're not going to get anything of value in a league of a certain depth.
And so to turn the discussion a little bit to valuation, just, I have my Pecota spreadsheet open, so I'll just use that one. They have 19 pitchers projected to contribute at least 10 standing points in 2018. They have 86 hitters. So we can talk about, you know, pitchers might be more scarce, and maybe that's a reason to go get the higher end pitchers, but there's just not that many impactful pitchers.
Okay, Ben says, I'm in a one catcher head-to-head categories league with daily moves. Considering taking two catchers on the same team to get more plate appearances than everyone else out of the catcher slot, perhaps the Braves? What are your thoughts?
I don't necessarily dislike this strategy, but it's really, really dependent on how many bench spots you have. Because in a head-to-head categories league with daily moves, Adam, you've talked about it, you want to get you are more into the heavy reliever strategy here, and then you just are streaming starting pitchers with good matchups. And so you're going to want to use a lot of bench spots on starting pitchers. So it's just, like, if you only have five bench spots, I'm probably not doing this. Yeah. I do want to have at least one utility type hitter that I can move into the lineup that's eligible in the outfield and maybe one infield position. But if I have seven plus bench spots, then I think it's a good strategy.
It also depends on, like, the Braves catchers were the best in baseball last year in terms of hitting. Does anybody think Kurt Suzuki and Tyler Flowers are going to do that again?
Definitely not.
No, I would Dodgers do it with catchers. The Dodgers because they're still both really cheap. Yeah.
Reggie from Charlotte. I've been watching spring training stats for stolen bases and opportunities. The Rockies, Phillies, Blue Jays, and Cubs are running more this spring than they did in 2017. Rockies, Phillies, Blue Jays, and Cubs. None of those teams had 20 steals guy last year. Who has the best shot at 20-plus steals in 2018? I guess he's asking from the Rockies, Phillies, Blue Jays, and Cubs.
Cesar Hernandez, Odubel Herrera for the Phillies, Charlie Blackman on the Rockies, and that's probably
Ian Desmond.
Ian Desmond, yeah.
Blue
Jays, I don't...
I mean, David Dahl, if he gets up early enough, has that kind of potential. And the Rockies.
Anybody.
Yeah. Well, just Kevin Pillar maybe could steal 20. Teoscar Hernandez, if he's up early enough, could steal 20.
And then the Cubs. We've seen Jason Hayward do it. Ian Happ has run in the majors.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of those guys. I don't think anybody in their lineup has.
Ian Happ lost 20 pounds.
Yeah, I don't think anybody in the Cubs lineup has 20 steal potential.
It seems to go against what they would think philosophically, too. I did see something from Bud Black early this spring, though, Rockies manager, about how he wants them to be in a team that runs. So of those teams, I would look for the spring tendencies to carry most over most for the Rockies.
I mean, that'd be huge for Charlie Blackman. He does have like a 40 steal season under his belt, right? So just give me like 25 and you'd be perhaps worthy of the third overall pick, maybe fourth in Roto.
Yeah, probably.
All right, I'm going to read one more email. I'm going to save a lot of emails for tomorrow. We'll do an ADP review and a mailbag show tomorrow. But Mike says, if it's statistically averaging up to the mean after poor production, there's a word for it, and it isn't positive regression. It's progression.
Or no, progression to the mean. He's wrong. This is just like I get it. And maybe we're communicators professionally. That's what our job is. And if we confuse people by saying positive regression, I don't know how you could.
Just say regression.
But like,
take the positive part out.
It's right. Like, it is correct to say regression.
What? But why is it not correct to say progression?
Because it's regression to the mean.
Because in the discussion of regression to the mean, whether it's good or bad is irrelevant.
Right, but I do think that you guys should maybe change it because people don't necessarily know what the mean is.
I am not the person that came up with regression to the mean. I don't have the power to change the meaning of this thing.
Well, like I said, we could. Our job is to communicate. If people are not understanding what we're saying, then maybe we should change that. But we've also established what we mean by regression. If we switch now, there's just as much a chance that we're going to confuse people. Look, we're having this discussion.
I think the biggest thing is being understood. So, like, and language is constantly evolving. Irregardless is a word now. You know, these things change. They don't happen just because one person decides it's going to happen. But
should we call it reversion?
If enough people get confused about the way regression is applied in this case, then eventually the English language will adjust
progression already has a meaning and it's different from this.
But regression has a meaning.
Regression has the meaning that we're using.
A return to a former or less developed state. When you say regression, people think bad.
Former.
Or less
it definitely
developed.
Has a negative connotation.
Of course it has a negative connotation. Of course.
Yes, outside of the mathematical context in which it's being used
but
in this conversation.
Most of the people listening aren't mathematicians. Like, we're not mathematicians.
So how would you like for us to incorrectly word this from now on?
I don't care.
I think you got to clarify with positive regression.
Yes.
I don't think you can just say this guy's going to regress this year and assume everybody listening knows you
90,
mean positive.
90% of the time, that is what we do.
Okay, good. Well, 90% of the time,
But he was specifically
asking us not to say
positive regression.
Oh, I know. I'm disregarding that and having a broader conversation.
Just do what Scott thinks.
Yeah, and not what Mike thinks. Mike, great email. But you're wrong. And we're back tomorrow with some more draft prep for you on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. See you later.